Blog Talk Radio.
There is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man, a lot of time.
Which direction we are going?
Directly El Camino. Would have been DWI.
We have reached a tipping point.
Once again for the tipping point, I am Stephen Platinum, a little older, but definitely no wiser. And then joining me, as always, the hardest working man at GWH, going to shows and doing reviews, the venerable Larry Goodman. How are you doing tonight, Larry?
Fine. And again, a happy birthday to you. Maybe you're a tad wiser, at least, I would hope.
Oh, perhaps I am. I do live in Florida, and when it's this damn cold everywhere else, it is the time where I'm perhaps most glad to live in Florida.
Yeah,
the weather, though, has been insane.
What's going on?
It's
well, I mean, you know how it is in Atlanta, as usual. It didn't amount
sure.
to anything, but we did have snow floating around in the air most of the day where I was, so it was kind of interesting, kind of pretty, actually. It's kind of nice. So.
Yes. So no doubt there is not a drop of milk or a slice of bread to be found in any store. Larry, you were a busy bee. You went to, of course, what I read that review, and I guess I was not shocked in the least. Corey Hollis locking it up with AJ Styles in his last indie match. And, boy, tell us about that. So they had 475 people at that show. My goodness.
Yes, the atmosphere was killer in that place because you had that – the perfect size venue for the number of people where you get that really nice packed house feeling and that kind of intensity that comes
with
that kind of a setup. And, you know, a crowd that was so psyched to see the show that they literally could do no wrong. And the wrestlers were psyched. I mean, everybody brought their A game. The guys,
it sounded like it was it sounded like it was an incredibly well-booked affair. You know, they mm-hmm. had angles going on. They gave you a reason to come see various things unfold at later shows. I thought that was just phenomenal. And I got to say, I guess one thing that shocked me, I honestly didn't feel like Corey – I didn't know – what AJ Styles was going to be able to do. Does that make sense? Because, mm-hmm. when he wrestled for WrestleMerica, I mean, it was, you know, it was turned into a tag match. And I mean, like, none of that was – I mean, you certainly understood, but, boy, just Corey Hollis. I guess it's a real testament to Corey Hollis and how confident – I don't know, powers that be feel about him. I mean, I got to imagine if AJ Styles was wrestling somebody else, there might have been some concern. But Corey Hollis, of course, has done a number of things with NXT. Clearly a guy who's, you know, you're going to want to look out for in 2016 to see where he ends up going and where he ends up getting signed. But, boy, they really had a great match, him and AJ, didn't they?
Yeah, it really was a very good match. It was the kind of a match – well, really, it was the match I expected I would see from AJ at WrestleMerica that I didn't see, that didn't happen there. He did his typical match, and I think AJ was pretty psyched by the atmosphere there as well. You couldn't have asked for more. I was so happy for Wood. For Big Wood, the way everything came out with that show, and you got to feel like Georgia Premier has some momentum for future events to get 475, and the thing that really like struck me was how well received his guys were, his talent was, with people that really didn't, a lot of them didn't know his guys. They came to see Styles, but they reacted really well to a lot of the other stuff.
I feel like, Larry, and correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like we're in a true believer era again. I think Woods guys are true believers. I think definitely PCW, that had another just packed out, you know, Steve, we don't know where to put people kind of problem, and they're going nuts for everything. And, you know, it's just, that's a true believer crew. I think Empire, where you were on Saturday, is a true believer crew. And certainly there are others, but I mean, you know, an Empire, and you said it wasn't your favorite, certainly out of the big shows of theirs that you've attended, but undoubtedly, oh my God, those two main events. I mean, just reading about that ladder match and reading, of course, about Strychnine and Tank's match. Rare is the time that I honestly go, I absolutely wish I could have seen it. Now, of course, I say that all the time about matches, but that's one of those ones where it's like, fuck, I don't know if I'm ever going to get to see something like that again. And, you know, it's like they sounded like they just went all out at Empire for those two matches in particular.
Yeah, those guys in the ladder match, that was nuts. Stuff they were doing in that ladder match, too. And then they really did pull off most of it quite well. You know, then they had the story, too, with, for those who aren't familiar, matchmaker, booker, slash whatever, Andrew Alexander, has been getting his ass handed to him by White Rose for the last several months. And the match built to a lights-out spot with White Rose leader Ryan Vega on top of the ladder and lights on, and it's Andrew Alexander under a hood, and he just beats the holy hell out of him with the ladder. So that got a big reaction for sure. Well, of course, we'll talk more about Empire when we have our guest for this evening, Strychnine, joining us in a few minutes, and we're certainly going to talk more in depth about that ungodly death match. But, you know, Southern Fried had another good crowd at their show as well. So, I mean, it was a good recon all around.
Yes, and you know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the Eli Daniels fundraiser show put on there in Temple. I honestly didn't hear a whole lot about that show. I looked at pictures and tried to see how they did and what was going on, but no doubt that was a very emotional night. You know, Eli Daniels is one of those guys that he's wrestled for just about everybody at one point or another. And, of course, just, I don't know if you've seen pictures of the car wreck, Larry.
Oh, yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
My God. And, you know, the fact that he's up and about. But, of course, you know, he's healing. The medical bills are extensive. So, you know, kudos to, you know, Scotty East. Kudos to Billy Knight. Kudos to everybody who's helping to alleviate a little bit of that financial burden on Eli and his parents on that show. Wow. A huge, huge weekend in wrestling. And, it seems like now that we're only on every other week, it seems like every time we talk, there's always something. It's always been another big weekend and another big weekend. And I saw Southern Fried, you know, they have a big show coming up. And then they have the Charlie Smith tribute show coming up with like 5 billion, it seems, all these kind of like wrestling veterans coming out of the woodwork that are going to be in one building that you can see. It's a great freaking time to be a wrestling fan, which is not to say everything is hunky dory. I gotta say, and I hate to sound like internet smart guy, but I'm going to sound like internet smart guy. You know, the Daniel Bryan thing, which we will talk about at the end of the show, was amazing. Dave Meltzer, did you see where Dave Meltzer said it was the greatest wrestling segment ever?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really hard to argue against
that.
Yeah. I mean, Dave Meltzer, yeah, he wrote one of my favorite reviews of anything, which was there was an episode of SmackDown that was absolutely horrible. This is like when things started falling apart in like the late, like before 2010. It was just horrible, horrible show. And then he just put, for his SmackDown review, he just put, "Well, that was terrible." That's all he wrote. And I remember like, oh, man, he couldn't have said anything more brutal. It's just like, I'm not even going to talk about this shit. But, yeah, for him to just fall in love with that segment, it's hard not to. And, you know, now they're putting out the pictures of Daniel Bryan absolutely destroyed backstage, and it was beautiful, and we're going to talk about that. But it kind of put into finite focus for me something, like I was talking to somebody this morning and I just went, WrestleMania, not only do they not have anything epic lined up, I don't know if they have anything even really good lined up. And I don't remember ever saying, you know, usually it's just like in the last few years it's been, well, you know, things aren't really good at WWE, but then the Royal Rumble happens, and even if people aren't completely happy, there's this sense of, okay, now they've got it together, and they're going to, and WrestleMania is going to be this amazing event. I would say outside of the AJ Styles thing, I don't know. It's hard to imagine a good matchup for Brock. It's hard to imagine a good matchup for Undertaker. And I don't know. Am I just being overtly cynical? Or am I missing something? The 100,000 seats they're going to try to sell.
I don't really think so. And when you look at, I mean, here we are, February the 9th. I mean,
yeah.
time is ticking here, and they still don't have much out there about what's going to take place at this show.
I mean, are they counting on, I guess they're counting on Fastlane to line up a bunch of matches. But last night, my wife is such a great barometer of what's going on. And so is my kid, but Julie, as we're watching the Wyatt family beat up Ryback, she just goes, "What are they doing?" And I go, "Oh, they're beating up Ryback," and I'm trying to explain. She goes, No. "It's WrestleMania time. What are they doing?" I was like, and I just shrugged and I said, "You're right." And she goes, "Who's Bray Wyatt going to wrestle?" I'm like, "I don't know, honey. I guess they're waiting for a Fastlane." And she just rolls her eyes and she goes, "Obviously, you know, they want to turn New Day or the Wyatt family. Like, why aren't they putting those guys on a collision course with each other? Why does everything feel so?" And I go, "I don't know what to tell you. They haven't had good instincts on this stuff for years. I remember when they threw the Wyatt family against the Shield, which everybody loved, and they did these great matches. And it was like, why didn't they just wait 2 months and do that at WrestleMania?" It's like, And she just went, "What are they doing?" And, you know, I woke my kid up for the Daniel Bryan thing because she loves that guy. That's the first wrestler that she just sort of felt connected to. And so it's like, you know, I think he's going to retire and blah, blah, blah. And so she watched it and she just went and she just kind of looked at me with these sad eyes and said, "Who's the hero now?" And I was like, "Well," and I was like, "Well," and she goes, "John Cena's not there." I'm like, "No." And she just goes, "Who's the hero now?" And she goes, "Roman Reigns." And I go, "Roman Reigns." And she goes, "Oh, so one of the boys in my class likes Roman Reigns." And I go, "Do you like Roman Reigns?" And she goes, "Yeah." Which is from an 8-year-old. That's as much of a diss as you're going to get. Just, yeah. But I'm like, if they can't, my 8-year-old is not hyped for WrestleMania. What, like, I mean, she went nuts for the Super Bowl and she's not hyped for WrestleMania. That's her dad's business, you know? So I don't know. I mean, I assume they've got plans in the works, but I mean, I just feel like, I mean, they're going to have to paper the hell out of this thing, aren't they, to get 100,000?
120,000? I mean, presuming they're going to block off a big section somehow that won't come into play, but still, you figure they'd be left with 100,000 to try to fill.
You know, Seth, Seth Rollins threw up a tweet at the Super Bowl, which he probably didn't know was going to get such a backlash. And he put up a picture of, you know, everybody talks about how great the Super Bowl is. Well, look, this is what WrestleMania did in that building. And so, you know, he puts up the great looking picture of WrestleMania, fireworks going off, all these people sitting on the field as well as in the stands, basically implying, yeah, the Super Bowl is pretty big, but we put more people in that building for WrestleMania. But one, I mean, you can't even compare ticket prices. You know how much tickets were going for in the sky boxes for the Super Bowl? I always check out how much tickets are going for. $500,000, Larry. If you wanted to go through a ticket broker and sit in a skybox, they were asking for, as of 2 weeks ago, they're asking for $500,000. I'm not saying they got it, but they had the balls to ask. And even the cheapest seats were like $2,500 for the worst seat in the house at the Super Bowl. And so, one, you can't even compare ticket prices of the Super Bowl and WrestleMania. But more than that, I don't think Super Bowl has ever had to give tickets away en masse. I don't think they ever left free tickets to random people at a hotel. And I don't know. I'm rooting for WWE at WrestleMania because that's all of our biggest events of the year. I mean, that's the wrestling industry's standard bearer. And man, I just want them to deliver. I just want them to come up with something, but I can't for the life of me think of what that's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if they have Rock there, I mean, it's probably not going to be for a match. I don't think his schedule is going to allow for that. Do you? I mean, if he's just not going to have time to put in for that, they can get him there. But yeah, they're not going to be able to do anything like that with him. So,
when he wrestled Cena that last time, I mean, he was hurt afterwards, and he can't afford to take time off like that again. And I mean, he has a body made for Hollywood. It looks great and it's huge and, you know, but it's also the kind of body that gets hurt really easily, especially when you don't do wrestling all the time. And yeah, I can't imagine him wrestling. You know, it's in Texas. So of course there's always these theories that they're going to get Stone Cold, but I don't see any indication of that.
He doesn't want to do it. No, I can't see that happening.
So it's tough, but speaking of deliver, people who did deliver, those pictures, that picture you put at the top of the Empire report alone of strychnine bleeding. I know people feel all different kinds of ways about, like, sort of quote-unquote hardcore wrestling. But, damn, Larry, I get excited. Like, you know, every year I sort of think about, like, am I going to go to an Ian Rotten show? Because, like, I secretly love that stuff. I mean, I don't book it. We don't tend to do it, but I'm just fascinated with that stuff, especially when it's done well. And it's, Tank, the guy who's been in a million matches like that, and Strychnine, the guy that showed that he could go that way. What was the sickest spot in the Strychnine Tank match to you? Like, what's the spot that just sticks out indelibly in your mind?
Strychnine already laid out in a bed of tacks underneath him. Tank took a barbed wire board, put it on top of him, and double stomped the board into his face and chest, breaking the board. It was like, there was something to ask him about that. But yeah, that's the one that I can't get out of my mind, is that one.
Wow,
but, you know, the thing
was
that the element of danger, as I put in my report, I mean, I, of course, grew up and came up on wrestling where there was always an element of danger in the building because people could do, you know, would hit the ring and crazy stuff would happen, which there just isn't that anymore. But, I mean, this match had that element of danger because of what, you know, what they were trying to pull off in there. So,
yeah, you know, it's been 2 years since I wrestled my last match. And I remember when I was sort of thinking about what did I want to do in that match. And it was all about my wife used to accuse me negatively of going, you think everything in wrestling and theater and everything else that you do, you always have to fool people and there always has to be danger. And I went, yes, Mm-hmm. Like, and I go, that's what I wanted in my match. I'm like, I wanted it to feel like, oh my God, I'm fucking scared for these guys. And so it's, you know, I'm going to pile driver him through a table and I'm going to, you know, light my arm on fire. Like, it's, I can't explain that mentality to non-wrestling people, but there is this idea of, you know, good old fashioned, and Empire in some like in the best of ways often feels throwback. And I love that idea of come for the spectacle of, you know, getting to sort of tap into your own darker nature of,
yes,
I want to see it, you know, just good old fashioned. I want to see it. Of course you don't want the guys to be seriously injured or anything like that, but there is kind of awe. There's an awe to watching something like that.
There definitely was. People definitely were in awe watching it. I can guarantee you that. And, you know, one, who else is doing a death match? And out of the blue, may not be the right way of saying it, but that they did a death match at this day and time in Georgia when, you know, nobody's doing anything like that. It was pretty cool, I have to say. I would want to see them all
and
the time.
I got it. You know what? You know what? I don't. You know what? Right, right. I don't want to see him over. I don't want the death match to become. Oh fuck! I'm gonna get in trouble. The tournament. My fucking God! Can everybody stop doing goddamn tournaments? You know, whenever I talk about what we may or may not do at PCW, that has moved to the top of the no-no list. Like,
I
can't do
so.
A tournament. You can't do it. Can't do it. But deathmatch, woohoo! Like, now you can't do a deathmatch because you ain't going to do it better.
No, don't have a tough time topping this one. Well, why don't we bring the man on here?
Yes.
I think we have
please do.
Here. Joining us on the tip.
I will introduce him. A guy that I have nothing but the utmost respect for, a guy who is with the Hate Junkies, a guy that's coming to his own, a guy that really made his way in APW and just wrestled an early contender, as improbable as it seems, for match of the year. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Strychnine. How are you doing?
I'm doing. that's all I got. I was actually just examining myself earlier. I finally took off a lot of the bandages because they had to glue my shoulders shut. And I have barbed wire holes in my face. And from the aforementioned exchange that happened with the double stomp, I just pulled barbed wire out of my face. Luckily, you can't ruin this because it's already jacked up. it's I look like a larger animal chewed on me.
Well, Strick, I'm going to start with the toughest question first, in my eyes, out of the questions that I have. I'm going to start with the toughest one. You're a guy who, I hope you don't get mad about me bringing this up. I mean, you're a guy who's like a phenomenal father, and unlike a lot of the boys, and again, I'll get in trouble for saying this too, you've got your shit together. You work very hard. You work very hard all the time. You're a great dad. Like, what? When you do the death match, what is your, like, why are you doing a death match, I guess? Obviously, you and Tank were going to go all out with the thing. This wasn't going to be some, we're going to do a death match so it'll sell tickets and then half-ass it. I mean, you guys clearly went into this thing going, we're going to do the best fucking thing we can. Like, did a thought pop into your mind of like, I don't know if I should do this or you have to do it?
He and I had been at it. This started in October. Okay. And back in October, I was up in Tennessee visiting a friend. It's weird how my life comes full circle. I was hanging out with someone that I knew on the internet, but only met in person at a Marilyn Manson show up in Chattanooga, and Dan had been hitting me up trying to see if I wanted to come through Empire. Dan Wilson had. And so I was in the neighborhood, and I came by, and they wanted to talk about bringing me in, and he said, if we're going to bring you in, we kind of need someone to be, you know, a top heat magnet, and what could you do to make a big impact in, say, and you know, this company. I was like, so your top baby, who is your everyone's favorite guy? He goes, Tank. I'm like, well, like, what could you do? I'm like, I could just do a regular thing where I run out and jump him, but and I looked at him, I said, so if you could Tank, I run out and hit Tank with the F5, and he looked at me, he went, fucking excuse me? Tank's about 390, and thus far, the biggest person I'd ever picked up was about 380, so I figured, I mean, 10 more pounds, what are you going to do? And it was amazing because I think they weren't sure if I could really do what I said I could. And, but yeah, that was main event. I ran out, I got him up, I hit him with the move, and the entire audience was dumbfounded. Because again, I'm 6'11", 227, and Tank's 2 inches taller than me, about 390. Like I said, I hit him with the F5. It was my first showing in this company. So, going forward, months, you know, we had been, this has happened in October, you know, so on and off for the coming months, he and I have been at each other, beating each other up. We'd had a couple matches, and it's weird to say it on paper that this death match was when Tank finally beat me, given that, again, he's much larger than I am. It took this for him to finally beat me, but, to answer your question, what was going through my mind, I don't know. I've done some deathmatch stuff before, wrestling for Insane Clown Posse, but
yeah.
I don't know. I actually felt more, I mean, I knew it was going to hurt, but I knew that Tank was going to, I was going to go into a match with Tank that I was going to hurt a lot, but survive. You know what I mean? He's a professional.
Yeah.
A lot of guys are more reckless. Where, because the object of what we do isn't to cripple someone, it's to, you know, obviously you beat the living tar out of them, but they're going to walk again. And I knew he's the kind of guy where we would have the match and, you know, make some memories, do some really hard-hitting stuff, but I'd walk away in something resembling One Piece.
When you came in and started into the program with Tank, at what point did you learn that it was going to build to a death match?
I can't remember when they contacted me. They asked first. He's like, how comfortable would you be with doing a death match? In which, when someone says death match, there's a whole array of things that go through your mind because you're not exactly sure. It just kind of depends on what stuff they show up with for you to use.
Right.
I obviously, at this point, anytime you say someone says deathmatch, you think there's going to be thumbtacks, all the regular hardcore crap. Or for some odd reason, when we as wrestlers decided to start fighting with baking sheets, I don't know, but it's just something we do. Because there's like cooking sheets and stuff like that. Yeah, because fuck baked goods, that's why. but yeah, it was about a month beforehand where they said, you know, we'll do this, and you guys have had your matches, and you know, it'll when it's all said and done, do you feel comfortable doing a death match with them? And if it was with somebody else, you know, I wouldn't have been so comfortable with it. And the fact that I liked it so much was the fact that it made sense. We weren't just throwing us out there with a bunch of garbage to do stuff. The people who saw that match, who had been there for a while, they saw it culminate to where that was necessary, because we beat the unholy mother piss out of each other so much that that's where it had to end.
I'm curious about the light tube, where you got... If I remember correctly, choke slammed across a light tube that was set across two chairs, and it exploded. I mean, it's an incredible effect. How dangerous is it?
there's always, how to put this, I probably, if I really thought about it more, because that was always the iffy one in my mind, because whether or not there were going to be light bulbs, because they've become a staple of the death match, but I wasn't sure if they were going to do that. You know, sometimes you gotta get in wrestling, you gotta leap without looking. I tell you one thing, it's never fun picking broken glass out of your ass crack, but that happened. There were quite a few shards stuck and hanging out of my back and elbows and everything. It's dangerous. I'd say it's more dangerous a lot of the ways that when you're going through them and they're stationary, it's not as dangerous as when someone is swinging them at you. So, I don't know, because I've been on the receiving end of that, too. Well, a lot of the one thing, a lot of the rope deathmatch guys, they like to do is they'll take one, and they'll have it, like, set on your head. And they'll have it in, their left hand, and they'll place it on the head. And then they'll take the one in their right hand and swing it and clack them together. I can honestly see more potential for absolute horror with something like that when they're coming at you as opposed to you going through it. So I guess it's more controlled when, you know, I guess when you're falling and they're not being swung.
Strick, you guys packed the house, right? I mean, that building holds 250. You had 250 there. That has to feel absolutely incredible. Obviously, the crowd gave you the reaction that you wanted. I'm always curious about this because I've never been in Empire's locker room. What was the reaction from the guys when you finally got to the back?
A lot of clapping, and a lot of those guys had never seen anything like that in person. And another thing is a lot of those guys really didn't know me that well because I am new.
Right.
And a few of them don't understand. I think Larry was the one who a long time ago started describing me as indestructible. And that's one of those things that's followed me through the years. And, certain people, Dan Wilson, Andrew Alexander, Tank, they knew me. But the rest of the guys, I was kind of a stranger. So they hadn't seen the ridiculous things I could endure and somehow escape unscathed. And people were just like, they were looking at me, like that slow clap, eyes wide open, when I said I wasn't human, that one, the jury's still out on that one. it's amazing because there's always the great energy that comes from the crowd. And then there's a different level of when you can tell that you're getting the genuine respect from the boys as opposed to, okay, I'm clapping because other people are clapping because we're expected to
clap.
Well, just one more thing from the crowd perspective at the end of that match. I don't know if other people reacted this way. I'm guessing a lot of them were. It was horrifying the way you looked at the end of that match. And I thought, thinking to myself, is he going to get up and walk out of that ring? You know, it was just... I think people are just in a stunned silence. Were you going to be able to stand up after that? It was quite incredible. I have incredible respect for you, sir. I mean, indestructible doesn't begin to describe it.
I wear that like a badge, sir. And it's one of those things where, the audience, again, they had never seen anything like that live before in that building, because we were the first to ever do it. And there's a certain level of violence in professional wrestling, but this is on that, you know, all blown up. And plus, the average person just doesn't see things like that with their own two eyes. And it's weird because, this is one of those things that just kind of follows me as well. I told them coming in, they said they portray myself as, you know, the antagonist, what have you. Audiences don't let me stay that way. By the time we got into the match, even beforehand, I got Tank being the favorite, there were the cheers for him, but it always happens with me where before the match, it was about 60-40, obviously on Tank's end. And I definitely got a standing ovation when I walked out because, I can't remember exactly how someone put it. They said they called it the Raven effect, where if you do something really badass for a long period of time, even if people aren't supposed to get behind you, they do.
Yeah.
So that's that whole thing there. I'm not sure what they want to do with me going forward, but they could start portraying me as a fan favorite tomorrow, and the crowd would take it, despite all the terrible things I did to Tank.
Talking about like other things that you're doing. Tell me about Why We Wrestle. They got a tournament going on. It's going to go on until the end of March, I believe, and culminate at a big show. What's the atmosphere like at Why We Wrestle under new management? Obviously, you've been in that building for years and years and years. What's your general vibe of how things are in the locker room?
I am very excited about everything that's going on. I trained there. That's a little backstory with me. My first independent show was in that building back when it was Wildside. First one I ever attended, and I found out that the training school there, and I was like, sign me the fuck up. And that's how it's been ever since. The company has changed hands a few times, but I've never seen someone take the reins to have who had an idea of what they wanted to do with it before the ink was dry. That's new. Almost every other time it had been sold out of kind of desperation. Whoever owned it was having life issues,
yeah,
or just didn't have time, and it was always in that crunch of I gotta find an owner. This was somewhat along that vein, but it wasn't. As soon as it was on the market, we pretty much already knew, even though we didn't know who, we knew that there was a very interested buyer with, some money on their hands. And that's the fun, that's the good part it's the product, the building the product you've accustomed to, but in a direction that hopefully is fresh. There's been a facelift to the building, the entrance ramp is elevated. They repainted the guardrails, the ring posts. They've just done some cosmetic facelifts to the building. I mean, there's not much you can do to the basic structure of that old schoolhouse, but the way they've changed it, first of all, there's way more room in the back than there ever was before, and that actually, it helps take a little anxiousness off of us, because there's been shows back in the Anarchy Wildside days where, we'd have a full card, and it was like trying to make your way through a mosh pit every time you tried to go from
absolutely
yourself to the gorilla position. You've been there, and there's so much more room back there because it's just set up differently. And again, that helps decrease the stress of, because you always kind of have a little bit of the jitters before a match, but there's something about having room to actually breathe that kind of takes that edge off. The audience isn't great. I think we've had one show that drew a little less than stellar, and the other one being one of our more recent ones was when we were having all that bad weather. We had a very good house.
Yeah, sure.
A very enthusiastic, pretty full house, and they braved the cold to come watch us, and every one of us in the back were like, these guys are what it's about. They wanted to see it this bad. There's no way we're going to leave them thinking, I should have just stayed the fuck home. And that was pretty badass. I had a match with Slim J where we went to time limit. And he's one of the guys I've always fought to earn his respect, because I've always viewed him as being so much better than me at this. Because he is, whether he wants to admit it or not. He helped train me and all the other things. And there's certain people I've always tried to get their respect in the ring. And when we got to the back, he's like, you're where I am. He's wrong. I'm not that good. But it meant the world to me, to hear him say it.
Mm. It's that true believer thing, man. I think this is the age, and I think it's wonderful, of the fucking true believers. And, a number of leagues right now have guys who legitimately believe in what they're doing. And I think it's coming across. And I think that's why crowds are good for everybody or for a lot of groups, and why wrestlers just seem more enthusiastic about doing this thing than they have been in a long time. I think it's really great. Larry, did you have another question for Strick before we play the first round of Izzy High? Yes.
Oh, yeah. One more. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I first met you, of course, Strychnine, when you were a fan in that building. And I had no idea that you were going to wind up being a wrestler there. And this coming Saturday, you've got Jacob Ashwork in the second round of the Why We Wrestle tournament. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like going from being a fan in that building to main eventing in that building?
It's a hell of a trip. Because from the time I literally only went to one show as a complete fan, non-trainee. That was it. The first one-to-one show. The next time I was back in that building was that week to train, and then the next show I was a trainee. And it's interesting because I remember I still have yet to, and I hope I never do, completely detach myself from the wrestling fan in me. But even though I started understanding more what was going on, I would still just I still haven't lost my ability to lose myself in it. And that was true back then as it is now. And it's just it is kind of mind-blowing to me because even when I got into it, I always saw myself as probably just being in the undercard, always. I think when I got in, I was only like 180 pounds, and the average wild side guy was about 225, 230. I don't know why, but back then, I don't know, I always envisioned myself staying little. That didn't happen. yeah, and I never thought I'd become a workout junkie. I didn't see that happen. A little noted backstory, when I was in high school and doing wrestling, I wrestled 145, so imagine me that
tiny.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
So, I started on Friday nights at Wildside, way back when they did that, and I had so much fun, but there was, I still never saw that I would ever be in that main event spot, and I don't think I knew why I never saw it back then. But, come now, I see why. It's because I didn't have any real direction. I had this idea, because I've only ever had the one wrestling name, Strychnine. It's all I've ever had. But the idea behind what the character was supposed to be has evolved. And I always, even back then, I didn't understand. I was a one-note joke, but I was. And I did that for about 2 years, and where I really wasn't good. It was just the visual presentation of what I was, even though the audience didn't quite get what I was, because I didn't get what I was. To very much to his credit, it was Rick Michaels who sat me down one day.
I was just going to bring up Rick, because I remember Rick talking shit about you years ago and just going like, fucking this Strychnine kid, da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, well, fuck, Rick, help him out. And I think that's all. Oh, I can't wait for this story. I can't wait to hear it. Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
I kind of have to do my Rick Michaels imitation.
Please do.
Because we were at the company that would become APW in Bowman. He sat me down next to him. He goes, all right, Strick, I'm going to tell you this. I thought when you came in, you were just going to be one of them guys that trains and does some matches, and you're like, woo-hoo, I'm a wrestler. I don't give two dicks about anybody who doesn't have the fucking passion for this and wants to be, woo-hoo, I'm a wrestler. I thought that's what you were, but I was wrong. And, he goes, I don't mean to be mean, but you're the drizzling shits. And I just said, thank you, sir. Explain to me how I cannot be. that was when it clicked. Unfortunately, here's the bad part. Around this time, shortly thereafter this encounter, I had my shoe job, I had an injury to my right eye, and I had to take a year off because they had to replace.
I remember that,
A piece of metal removed from the retina of my right eye and the lens replaced. The lens of my right eye is a piece of plastic. And I was really starting to kind of get dig my fingers into how to really get good, and then I had to stop. And so when I came back, Slim J, Jeremy Bain, a variety of other people really helped, more hone what I was. And then the junkies came along. Met Danny Only. I did not know Danny Only when Jeremy Bain put us together. We were taking promo pictures, and he was behind me in line. And Danny Only, we somewhat had a similar look. And then Jeremy Bain, I have to do this impersonation too. Jeremy Bain was like,
hey, how you two? How you pacing together?
And we kind of looked at each other, shrugged, and went, okay. And we did some stupid pose, and he decided to put us together. Dan Wilson came up with the Hate Junkies name, but it was over the course of being in the tag team that more stuff just started clicking about psychology and how to present your persona and really connecting with the audience. So this brings us full circle to what you've originally asked, Larry. When Anarchy got bought and they started running it as Anarchy, they didn't have anything for me because, again, I was terrible at the time. When the Junkies were in full swing, they contacted us. They wanted to start using us. And at the time, there was kind of like a really bad connotation towards me. A lot of people had a little sour taste in their mouth when it came to my name, to the point where Danny actually at one point asked if I would contemplate changing it. I'm sticking with what I got. He goes, all right, I mean, that's all new. We'll prove them wrong, but a lot of people, there's a lot of, your name leaves a bad taste in people's mouth. And, at the time I understood why, and it was time for me to really prove them wrong. So when they brought us in as the Junkies, they brought us right in against the New Wave. Derek Driver and Steven Walters, now Dash Wilder. And we came in the door feuding with the hottest tag team there. So, and it was time for, me to show everybody that I wasn't the same guy I was when they stopped using me on Friday nights. Well, when Friday nights were done, I'm sorry. And
nice.
It was interesting because, I went from being a fan, Wrestling Fridays, not being there, to coming in at the upper part of the mid-card. So, and then there were a couple different occasions where I think it was, Danny had gotten hurt, and I was by myself for a little while, just kind of doing nothing. When they brought him back and Dan Wilson took us over to manage us, and then we went back into a thing with the New Wave again. That was when things really started. I'm like, I'm really getting this more than I ever had before. And, we would main event shows in tag and singles matches and with the Junkies act. It was really surreal to me. It was never a goal, but it just happened. And then after a while, when Danny left to go overseas, I started being more of a singles guy. Then I just never saw myself as being that main event material because in my mind, I always saw, when I thought Anarchy main event, I thought Onyx, Judas, men who dwarfed me. At some point it just kind of clicked. I'm like, this is what I want to be on the top of this company. and I took someone aside, one of the, you know, I think it was Todd or somebody. I said, I'm not the kind of person that says, you should give this to me. I'm going to ask, what do I need to do to be here? Because I want to be here, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to be here. If you can think of anything that I'm not doing that I need to, tell me now.
Mm.
And so I don't know, something just lit a fire under my ass. And because I think it was the fact that I'd become the top guy at APW. And
yeah.
Have been for a while. And it was one of those, I've done this here. I've drawn on, you know, me and the main event, I've drawn bigger crowds than some of Anarchy's big shows when the house is packed. I can do this here. And it all just started coming full circle. And I'm going to work my ass off to win this tournament. The weather prevented my first round match. This one coming up against Jacob. And absolutely no disrespect to Jacob, because I've wrestled him 12 times, and he's a tough customer. But, yeah, it's one of those things. I'm taking it to him, and my eyes are only on the prize at the end. So,
you know, I'm so glad you came on. I got to say, you know, part of your main event thing, I mean, it's, you know, your feud with Anthony Henry obviously was a huge deal at APW, and then, you know, you ran with the ball at Anarchy. I remember, you know, in that last Anarchy show, it wasn't pleasurable to get my ass kicked. Like, it was pleasurable to go, like, you know, you come out with that, and I just remember thinking, like, that's a main eventer. Like, that guy gets it on every level, not just because you're breathing fire, but I think that that's like a perfect symbol of that guy's a star. And for you to go from fan to kind of maligned to a guy that just by grit and guile and got the respect of your peers. And, you know, you have your respect of the peers and Empire and damn near everywhere else you've ever been. So kudos to you. Would you indulge me on my birthday, since you brought up Rick Michaels and did a dead-on impersonation of him? I want everybody to understand how great that impersonation was. We play a little game called Is He High, and I've requested to play it twice tonight for my birthday. Would you play Is He High with me and Larry about Rick, please?
I will, but I'm straight edge. I'm probably going to lose this because I'm not the proper barometer for that. But all right, go ahead.
Well, Strick, let's get into it. Larry, do we have this first edition of Is He High ready to go?
Coming your way right now.
Oh boy.
Because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La la la.
It's time to play. Is he?
Pound of weed and played a bunch of video games. Weed is tight. Weed is
October
tight.
October the 19th. Tag team title tournament in Peach State Wrestling. The tag team titles are second on my list. Simon Servin, look. Look at me. And look in my eyes. And listen to the warning that October the 19th, if I see one exotic one step foot inside the building, I will beat on you like just step in the building. At first sight, you're mine!
Yes! Yes! Larry, there's Rick Michaels. What year would you say that happened? What year is that promo?
What is that feud with Simon, 3-4 years ago?
Yeah. So Larry, I just wanted to hear Rick Michaels' promo. That's why we set that up. But what would you say? Is Rick Michaels high there?
Nah, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either. Strick, hearing that promo, man, Rick Michaels is the guy who sat you down and kind of helped put you on the path that you are now. When you hear that promo, what runs through your mind?
I don't know. It was kind of choppy on my end. I'm not sure if it's phone signal or what have
yeah.
you. But I don't know. It seemed. Are you asking me the whole Izzy High thing? Because I think he wasn't. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
My take on it is this. I don't think Rick was high at all at the point at which he cut this promo, but I would be remiss if I didn't say this, and even if only five people get it, I'm going to say it anyway. That's a shoot. You mark from Ray Rawls. That's one of the few Rick Michaels promos I've heard that didn't turn into some kind of really, really, really uncomfortable shoot. So I was actually glad to hear it.
There's one thing you can ever say about Rick Michaels is that man does absolutely nothing half-ass. He dives in.
That is true. Well, Strick, you're certainly somebody who falls into that category. Congratulations on your match with Tank and doing the deathmatch proud, first time in that building at Empire and packing it out. Best of luck in the Why We Wrestle tournament, and I'm sure we're going to see you around and have you on again at some other point. Thank you for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
Thank you. Woo! Wow. I forgot about that. I'm glad Strick did an impersonation of Rick Michaels and Jeremy Vane. Strick can do anybody. Yeah. I've heard his Jeff G. Bailey, and apparently he does an impersonation of me. I can never get anybody who does an impersonation of me to do it for me, which always makes me really sad. I don't know what an impersonation of me would be. It would probably make me cry a little bit, or I'd just Cam Newton that shit and walk away. But someday I'd love to hear it. We got to talk about Daniel Bryan. We don't have a lot of time, but Larry, let me ask you. This morning I busted out. I have a Best in the World, like, 6-disc set that I got at some indie show of Daniel Bryan. And I watched a bunch of matches just to sort of remind me just how great that guy was. And I got to say, even in those early years, boy, you could see that he had it. You know, when you watched Daniel Bryan give that speech, because, you know, at first I thought, oh, God, is this an angle thing? Is this like a desperate attempt to sort of set something up for WrestleMania and blah, blah, blah? And
me too.
I mean, at least in my mind, I quickly realized it was anything but that.
Right.
What were your thoughts? What are your thoughts sort of post Daniel Bryan speech that rocked the wrestling world?
Well, as you know, many have said, I mean, to me, it was one of the most amazing retirement speeches, if not the most amazing retirement speech I've ever heard from any athlete. To take what could have been a totally sort of somber experience with Bryan retiring and transform it into something celebratory.
Yeah.
Talking about his gratitude. I just love that. I thought it was fabulous.
Time he started to get choked up, his natural instinct was to tell a joke. And I say tell a joke, and I think that's treating it too lightly. He was determined that thing, I think celebratory is the right word. I think sort of a moment where he was connecting. It was his speech was about two things, and one was connecting with his father, connecting with his mother who was there, connecting with Brie Bella connecting with his life, connecting, you know, different aspects of his wrestling career, connecting to the fans. And then the other thing that he did is he said the word wrestling, I don't know how many times.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, you know, it wasn't a bitter thumb in the eye of the WWE speech at all, but I thought it was a great, you know, I always said Ultimate Warrior pulled off an amazing trick, which is he's one of the few guys who got over on the WWE, right? They hatchet jobbed him in that DVD, and then he comes back and he's beloved. And then he gives this great speech on Raw, and then he dies. And so, like, at the end of the day, Ultimate Warrior has to be remembered as great. And everybody has to say it. You know, like Triple H, who is just like, WrestleMania experience was the worst ever, now claims, no, it was a great experience. I mean, he can't say anything but, you know, Ultimate Warrior won. And I feel like Daniel Bryan won also in a completely different way, even though he's not able to wrestle, which he clearly wants to,
yeah.
to. But, I mean, it's an he got to main event WrestleMania. I mean, it's such cliches, you know, but they did nothing but try to hold that guy down in so many ways. I mean, trying to saddle him with that B-plus player shtick. I know there were heels, but I feel like being heels allowed them to say things about him that didn't help make money. Like, they worked counter to making money, but he got over anyway. Maybe now that he's retired, they'll stop booing their fucking baby faces. That's the power of Daniel Bryan. That even in his absence, they're so desperate for him, and there's such a genuine love for him that nobody else could replace him in their hearts, you know?
Yeah.
And, man, it was something else. You know, a match that I watched that's on that six-disc set, which I can't recommend enough. If you can get Best of the World, it's just a six-disc set. It's got a bunch of stuff he did in indies, a bunch of stuff, like two of the discs are like matches he had in Japan. But he has a match with AJ Styles. And, I mean, they're very young. And you look at that match, and, of course, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but you look at it and you go, God, both of those guys just have it. And I think one of my favorite things to come out of it was CM Punk put up a couple of pictures of him and Daniel Bryan shaking hands when they're both in the indies. And Punk's got blonde hair and all that stuff. And then one of them shaking hands at WrestleMania. And, I mean, the message was very clear, which is we're two guys that weren't supposed to be where we were. And in
right.
spite of it all, we were there. And that can never be taken away. And maybe with this WrestleMania coming up that I'm so painfully unenthusiastic about, maybe it's a nice reminder that it's not just about manufacturing stars, but it's also about things don't feel organic and they don't feel dangerous and they don't feel unexpected. And maybe the Daniel Bryan retirement, I'm being optimistic, but I'm hoping that's a reminder with all these guys at NXT that just have worlds and oodles of talent who are going to get called up. Like, I think about Bayley, actually. When I thought about Daniel Bryan, I think about Bayley, and I go, there's something really special about that girl that
yeah.
goes beyond how she's booked. You know, she, like, did that entrance thing for Finn Balor. And it was obviously planned out and all that kind of stuff. But there's just a genuine sweetness about her that actually gets around the natural smart mark defense that every smart-ass mm-hmm. wrestling fan puts up. Daniel Bryan's one of those guys that got behind that wall. And I think Bayley's another one who just, you know, they don't – her shtick is so sweet and open where it's just like you need a hug. And there's so many ways that the wrestling fans could turn that around and make it into something sexual and shitty and dirty. But there's this understanding that she has earned a respect that you do not do that. She's above that.
Right.
And I'm hoping that some of these guys, they figure that out and they figure out how to not get that out of them. Because I think there's a lot of guys with a lot of special qualities, but how to embrace and nurture that instead of trying to take credit for something. I think there's a lot of that, that they want Roman Reigns to get over in large part so they can say, we saw that this guy was a star and now he is, instead of who do they like and who can we foster? Daniel Bryan's one of those guys that fought odds and won. And you know, wrestling's fake, wrestling's whatever. At the end of the day, it's the reason people went nuts when Benoit won the title at WrestleMania 20. And I know that's a name we're not supposed to say, but when he won that title, it transcended, here's a guy who's a babyface winning a championship from a heel. It went into the realm of, that's a guy that I genuinely want to win. Daniel Bryan had that. And I'm hoping that they find those guys in the next couple of years.
Well, I hope they open themselves up to tapping what's there inside of these people, because what a beautiful thing when they tap what's inside Bryan Danielson and look at what's there, and it's irresistible. And I have to believe that, you know, there's other guys, if they can help bring out what's in them, which has always been made the best quote unquote characters in wrestling, they'd be so much better off.
You know, I think that there's glimmers of hope. Like, you look at a team like that. You look at the New Day. What impressed me when they were showing stuff about Daniel Bryan throughout the night is that comedy stuff he did with Kane, I'm still convinced was that was the star maker, you know?
Yeah.
That was, I mean, horribly mismatched tag team thrown together has been like a Russo staple for more than like a decade, two decades, right? Just fucking, and the premise of it is so terrible, right? Two guys that hate each other, but they're tag team champions, so I guess we got to get along. And it's been done to death, but him and with Kane, who's been there longer than, you know, almost anybody else. But those guys were magic. It was fun. It was funny. I am the tag team champion, you know, hell no, yes, 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 no, 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 fucking all that thing. And I even speak about it, we're laughing because it was great, because you were genuinely happy for that guy. And I think New Day has that going, where it's like,
yeah,
they gave those guys a shit deal. And those guys made it into something great, to the point where they could put Mark Henry with those guys,
right,
and it's awesome.
Right.
What?
Just one tangent,
you can put Mark Henry with that thing and it doesn't kill it dead? Come on. Come on. Mark Henry doesn't kill your thing dead in the water. Like, I'm hoping, like you said. Yeah. I can't think of anything worse unless they dig Khali's ass up and throw him in it.
tangent on New Day.
Yes, please.
My wife is basically, although she used to love wrestling, she's bored to death with most of what she sees now on Monday night when I'm watching it. But last night, she looks up as she's walking by, and she catches the segment with New Day. And she stops, and she watches, and she laughs. I mean... Mm. To me, that was very powerful about how strong their stuff is.
Stop, watch. That's what won them the Monday Night Wars. I'm stopping and I'm watching. Anybody who became a genuine star, rocks on, stop, watch. And who are the guys that are going to make them stop? And Daniel Bryan... I it's been said by a million wrestlers, but I think that guy's impact won't even be fully realized for years. And that ultimately is a testament, you know. It's sort of like, you know, Stone Cold and Rock had to go away, and then you really missed them. Then it was like, I already knew they were great, and I was there for the ride, but, you know, their absence actually made you miss them 10 times more. It was like,
yeah.
My God, miss those guys. That's why whenever they come back, it's like, oh, you know, it doesn't matter what The Rock says. Everyone says it's brilliant. Half the time I go like, that was actually kind of terrible, but who cares? You're just so happy to have him back. Daniel Bryan, I'm hoping the effect is different, that it's, you know, maybe instead of always looking for the next Rock or Stone Cold, trying to make Roman Reigns into Stone Cold, another version, maybe they're going to take a chance and go like, you know what, maybe we got some Daniel Bryans here, guys that we're going to allow to perform, see how they do, and then allow them to just go kick ass in that ring.
Right.
You know, that you can't force an underdog. You know, you can't force us an underdog. Sometimes the underdog is just, it's just a connection that's, I guess the word I'm looking for is transcendent. They need transcendent moments and performers. And, you know, it's not science, it's art. And I'm hoping that they learn their hands off the wheel a little bit and see where things go and let these guys find their path. They'll be all the better for it. They'll make untold gobs of money. And Daniel Bryan showed him that it's incredibly possible. So
absolutely.
It's wonderful. Well, it's my birthday, and we got a promo. Another one. This one's Jeff G. Bailey, and I thought it was a great way to sort of send off this show. I know Strychnine thinks a lot of Jeff G. I certainly do. And so we'll play Izzy High one more time.
Here we go.
It's time to play Is He
High? Talked about a fucking pound of weed and played a bunch of video games.
Weed is tight. Weed is tight. That's awesome.
That's awesome. Weed is awesome.
A long time. You couldn't stand the fact that this man absolutely owns your Uncle Tom Ruckus, that he beat him every time he came in this building. He left him laying in that ring in a puddle of blood more times than you could count to. But we were finished through with Ruckus. This man's not going to wrestle here. He doesn't have to do NCW. He's a WWF superstar. He's a Cash Money CD recording artist. And you want to put him in a steel cage. You want to lock him up like an animal, like the first time he was here. Well, I'll tell you what. We're not finished. His WWF contract can wait, because we're coming back to Cornelia, Georgia. And it's not just for you, Ruckus. It's for you, Chance Williams. It's for you, Bill Barron. It's for all you people that have tried to keep this man down. And I promise you, we are going to get that white devil, and you're going to tear him apart. And we're going to be ankle deep in his blood.
I want Chance Williams, all right?
We're coming back. We're coming back to get you.
I'm going. Give me a time machine. I don't think Jeff's hot, but... guys that are able to tap in, Daniel Bryan last night was able to tap into his heart and show it to us. That's art. That's art, right? Mm-hmm. You want to talk about the opposite end of the spectrum. That guy is able to tap into the reptilian portion of his brain and show it to us. And both of them, unforgettable. I don't think Jeff's high, but I think after listening to that, fucking I am. And I imagine wow. Reactions, Larry?
No, that was mind-blowing for me, time-traveling there back to R-Truth when he was K-Quick under the tutelage of Jeff G. Bailey. That promo had to come from 1999 or 2000.
That's awesome.
That was tremendous.
Wow, wow, wow. Well, a birthday well had, Strychnine, phenomenal guest. Love talking about Daniel Bryan with you, Larry. Obviously, we're going to have three the hard way next week, and then we'll join you the week after. Larry, real quick before we go, where are you going to be this weekend?
Probably at Why We Wrestle this weekend. Yeah, this the big week, the bigger weekend is the following one. This weekend is Why We Wrestle. NWA Atlanta, UIW, the following week has WrestleMerica, Peach State. Oh, I'm forgetting something else that's on it. Oh,
PCW, I'm showing up. I'm going to be there on the 20th. It's me, Carpenter, and Jeff G together for the first time in a long time. And we have a special surprise, a new member of Cornerstone that's going to blow the Georgia wrestling world away. So that's coming on February 20th. So it's going to be a big weekend, and the weekend after, obviously, is going to be big as well.
One thing we've talked before about redemption interview.
Yes.
And number one on that list we talked about was Cameron Cade.
Yeah.
And we have Cameron Cade in 2 weeks. He will be our guest.
I can't wait.
You
know? So, Cameron Cade with a redemption interview. You're going to want to tune into that in 2 weeks. Next week, three the hard way. Well, from Larry Goodman and myself, Stephen Platinum, we want to say congratulations and thank you to Daniel Bryan. And we will see you in 2 weeks on The Tipping Point.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.